hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
It's not about being politically correct. It was being biblically correct.
I know from some of the things that Senator Spector said to me over the weeks, I know how hard he's agonized. I believe he's going to be happier.
I think we're seeing a war brewing in the Republican Party right now.
It can only be attributable to human error.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That homophobe Antonin Scalia has got too many votes on this court.
Insanity runs in my family.
It's understanding that makes it possible for people like us to tolerate a person like yourself.
Behold, I send you out as sheep.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Glad to be back. 3 hours talking about the things that matter most. And we keep it going afterwards, too. Go ahead and get over to the CrestaInTheAfternoon.blogspot.com. We'll have new stuff posted there every day. Some of it we deal with directly on the air. Sometimes we only mention it in passing. All the commentaries that I do weekly, those of you who receive those commentaries by email, those are also going to be posted on the Blogspot. If you're not receiving the weekly commentaries that I send out, gee, I don't know what you should do. Yeah, why don't you email Nick? Just dawned on me. I don't know what to say. Call Nick. No, you email Nick, and that's ntom@wdeo.net. Ntom. That's two M's on Tom. ntom@wdeo.net. And we'll get you on the list for the weekly commentaries. But the blog, that's CrestaInTheAfternoon.blogspot.com. And get on over there. The daily program schedules are all in advance. The nice thing about having them in advance is then you can say, look, that's a topic I want to call in on. I should also tell my friends to be listening at that time. They're downloadable, MP3s, you know, podcasts, all 3 hours. You can put them. You're traveling to San Francisco. There's a lot of material for San Francisco you can listen to prepare yourself for your experience in that city. So just, again, load those up. We've got the guest archives, and that's at AveMariaRadio.net. And there are the guest archives. You can find books and websites, articles. And then we've got the webcam of the broadcast each day from 3 to 6 p.m., and there's where we're shipping around some video clips and audio clips of some key moments in the interviews. And, of course, when you get on over there to CrestaInTheAfternoon.blogspot.com, do some blogging. And want to hear from you. We look at the material every day. And we also have a Facebook page, so search for Al Cresta, huh? Those of you who use Facebook, and friend me. Be a buddy. Yeah, hey, my sister Lynn, did I ever tell you this? My sister Lynn had a ritual when we were growing up. She would bare her left arm, bend it at the elbow, and grab the rather insubstantial skin on the elbow, pull it down, and say, be a buddy. And we've never figured out the origins of the act or why it would receive that kind of attention, but through the Cresta growing up years, that was the way we did be a buddy. Except for me and George McCarroll, we exchanged blood, you know, and buried an egg. That's how we were buddies. But be a friend. It's easy to do on Facebook. Search for Al Cresta and friend me. All right. You don't have to pull your elbow. You don't have to cut your thumb. You don't have to bury an egg. We'll keep you informed. And then keep the phone number nearby at 1-877-573-7825. Coming up today, we'll continue to look at the Pope, turbulence in Israel. Unbelievable. Knowing the Pope's thinking, as I do, because he writes so much, and I assume that what he writes is also what he thinks, knowing him, as I do, and seeing the way he's being treated in Israel, really very frustrating. Rabbi Israel Meir Lau, chairman of the Yad Vashem Council, said that the Pope's visit in small speech at Yad Vashem lacked empathy. unbelievable. You don't talk about your guests that way. You just don't. You invite somebody over for supper, right? And you know the person begins talking about you begin sharing your background, and they listen and they say, "Oh yeah, that you really went through a lot." You don't stop the conversation by saying, "You know, you lack empathy." Really rude. Brad Miner is going to be with us again. Brad's been with us in the past talking about chivalry and gallantry. And he's written The Complete Gentleman, The Modern Man's Guide to Chivalry. And why not? This is a time when graduates are looking for a model of manhood. And Brad Miner will either be it, or at least he can write a good book about it. So that's coming up in the second hour of the program. Gary Bauer with us. A look at President Obama's first crack at the Supreme Court. What should we expect? And then I'm glad to say that Ted Byfield has been able to get the Christian History Project back on track. Volume 7 is now published, AD 1100 to 1300, The Crusades, Blood, Valor, Iniquity, Reason, Faith. We've talked about this series. It's an ecumenical series. But all who participated are serious Christians. And it is a fine, fine piece of work. Families ought to have it because it's colorful, it is attractive, and we'll have more to say about it as we go on. I'll talk about angels and demons in the last hour of the program, and then get the phone lines open at 1-877-573-7825. So be ready, 1-877-573-7825. Let's hit those headlines.
Thank you, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Kara Coulter with your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, May 20th, the Feast of St. Bernardine of Siena. An arrest warrant has been issued for the mother of 13-year-old boy suffering from Hodgkin's lymphoma. The boy has been ordered to undergo chemotherapy despite his objections and belief in natural remedies over conventional medicine. Legal expert Royal Oaks says the case is moving away from personal life decisions.
This case is morphing from a question of religious freedom and child protective services to an issue of criminal law, to the extent the mother has in fact taken the child away in defiance of a court order.
Brown County, Minnesota District Judge John Rodenberg issued the arrest warrant after Colleen Hauser and her son Daniel failed to appear in court yesterday. Colleen's husband told the judge he'd last seen the pair on Monday and didn't know where they'd gone. The promise to close the detention center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, hit a major roadblock when the Senate joined the House in voting down the funding to close the place. President Obama was dealt the political blow by fellow Democrats despite his promise to shut the prison down by January 2010. Priscilla Huff has more.
As a practical matter, they want a clear plan first. And that's why nearly every U.S. senator voted against providing $80 million to close the detention center. And most agreed that none of the detainees should be transferred to a U.S. prison. They listened to FBI Director Robert Mueller, who expressed his concerns that terrorist detainees might radicalize others held, even though senators pointed out that no one has ever escaped from a U.S. federal super maximum security prison. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Conflicting reports are emerging about Iran's possible launch of a new missile. A U.S. defense official who spoke on the condition of anonymity confirms the launch. However, Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman would not confirm if the U.S. military has evidence of the Iranian launch. Whitman said the Pentagon has concerns about Iran's nuclear ambitions. And Pope Benedict XVI announced today that Joseph Sestone, auxiliary bishop for Philadelphia, will be the sixth bishop of the Diocese of Saginaw, Michigan, and will be installed in July. 60-year-old Sestone has been a priest for 34 years and is a native of Philadelphia. Before being appointed an auxiliary bishop, Sestone was the dean of formation at St. Charles Borromeo Seminary and Newman Chaplain at the Delaware Valley College of Science. He succeeds Bishop Robert Carlson, who will become the archbishop of the Diocese of St. Louis, Missouri. The Diocese of Saginaw consists of about 119,000 Catholics. The House has approved a credit card reform bill today, sending the legislation to President Obama, who is anxious to sign it. The measure is designed to rein in questionable industry practices, including hidden or questionable fees, sudden spikes in interest rates, and strong-arm marketing tactics. Industry critics have warned that the measure could further restrict tight credit markets in this lingering recession. And finally, call it a case of crime-based karma. Police in Des Moines, Iowa, say a man was recently robbed while serving time in jail for burglary. Police say 57-year-old William Ritchie reported that burglars took his 3 flat-screen televisions, 2 computers, and other items from his apartment while he served time in jail on several charges, including burglary. Police say they have no suspects so far. And finally, your fascinating fact of the day. Actor Cary Grant's real name was Archibald Leach. In for Nick Tom, my real name is Kara Coulter, Ave Maria Radio News.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. For years, we've been monitoring the publication and distribution of a great series called The Christians, Their First 2,000 Years. And this is a series which has been consistently even-handed in its treatment of difficult issues. It's had a staff of writers who represent historic Christianity in its major traditions. It has been colorful, popularly but accurately written. There's an awareness of the depth of scholarship behind these articles, and we have been big enthusiasts for this series. And I'm glad to say that it's been a few years, we now have the next volume in the series. It's A Glorious Disaster, A.D. 1100 to 1300, The Crusades, Blood, Valor, Iniquity, Reason, Faith. And with me now to talk about Volume 7 is Ted Byfield, General Editor of the Christian History Project. He's been a journalist for, almost 60 years, and a Western Canadian magazine publisher since 1973. He was one of the founders of St. John's School of Alberta, an Anglican school for boys, where he developed a new method of teaching history. And I'll tell you, Ted, it's a great pleasure and a great source of encouragement to have you here with me today.
Well, I'm most pleased to be here, and I really appreciate the comments you've made on the series.
Well, how's the history been? We haven't heard from you for a few years.
Well, what happened was, it was started by a private company in Alberta. And the marketing was very expensive. About 10,000 people wound up subscribing to the series. It consists of 12 volumes, of which the seventh has now been published. So there's 5 remaining to do. The directors of the company, this is about 4 years ago, said to me before it folded, can you set up non-profit societies in both the United States and Canada? Really, it's a parallel society. There's actually one, but it's in 2 countries. To finish this series, and I certainly took on the job because everybody wanted it to be done.
Right.
So it took about 3 years to get the thing back up on its feet again. And we've just published volume seven, that, as you say, covers the period of the Crusades and some other major events.
Yeah, a lot more goes on during those 100 years.
And so on. And we're now working on volume 8, which covers the 1300s and the 1400s.
Yeah, this volume, we've got St. Francis is covered, the Crusades are covered. Genghis Khan's attacks are covered. You've got St. Thomas Aquinas, Crusades, as we said, Frederick Barbarossa. Again, an incredibly important figure in church history, but often overlooked. And you've got, of course, a resurgent Islam during this period as well. So you're... you, are you... you're happy that this is back on track.
Oh, of course, yeah.
What do we have to do to make sure it stays on track?
We're in a situation where we live in a society which has busily amputated itself from its own roots.
That is
what's going on.
I know.
A lot of people don't like this, but they have no idea what they can do about it. I mean, we should act politically wherever that's appropriate. But the main problem is that it's very difficult to persuade people who are not of a Christian background to favor laws that are advocated by that background, if you see what I mean. It's hard for non-Christians to understand or live according to Christian standards, and that's what we're up against.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality behind the culture war and all this sort of thing. So we thought, we being a group of lay people, really almost all of us journalists, Catholic and Protestant, thought, you know, if we could put together a series of books, a history, giving the whole background, all the events of 2,000 years, which gradually formulated what we call Western society, which is really, if you stop to think about it, it is the most compassionate, the most just, the most prosperous, the most educated, has been anyway, of any society in human history. This emerged from Christianity.
Yes.
Through a lot of trial and error and all kinds of things. We said, we're going to tell that story, and that's what we're doing.
People often forget that it's in the West that we had the scientific revolution. It's in the West that we had the great growth in the natural rights, human rights, and civil rights. These things
exactly. And everybody from the rest of the world is trying to move into the West.
Exactly.
Or emulate it, one or the other.
And these things didn't happen because... these things didn't happen in spite of Christianity and Judaism. It happened because of Christianity.
That becomes absolutely certain when you go through the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything. I mean, they look back, and a lot of people say, "Well, now look at the founders of the American Constitution, that sort of thing." Most of them were deists, true enough.
Sure.
But all of them were operating on principles that derived directly from the New Testament.
That's right.
Jefferson himself, you know, rewrote the New Testament, tried to get the theology out of it,
mm-hmm.
so that he could preserve the morality.
Yeah.
But what's the authority of the morality without the theology? And he didn't face that. But it isn't as though they somehow or other escaped Christianity. They invoked it at every turn, and that you can see.
My guest is Ted Byfield, general editor of the Christian History Project. We are excited because the 7th volume is finally out. A Glorious Disaster, The Crusades, Blood, Valor, Iniquity, Reason, and Faith.
Greetings and God's blessing. This is Father John Carapi inviting you to join me at the HSBC Arena in Buffalo, New York on August 15th for a powerful conference on the Holy Spirit. If you feel called to make a difference for the Lord Jesus and His church in your family, in your neighborhood, and indeed in the whole world, then this is a once-in-a-lifetime event you won't want to miss. We can no longer afford to stand by and watch our country decline, our children and families be threatened, and our church suffer from persecution and scandal. This conference, entitled The Person and Power of the Holy Spirit, will energize and equip you to embrace your call from God to transform our culture, our country, and our world.
To join Ave Maria Radio on this 3-day pilgrimage, call Corporate Travel at 313-565-8888 or on the web at ctscentral.net.
God bless you and see you in Buffalo.
Calling all World War II military personnel, you elite members of Michigan's greatest generation are invited to be a part of a historical group photo on the tarmac of the Yankee Air Museum. Hi, I'm Keith Fahey, the executive producer of Visionalist Entertainment Productions, and I want to announce a very special photo opportunity and introduce our documentary, Detroit, Our Greatest Generation. On Wednesday, May 27th, a gathering of World War II veterans will be photographed as a group at the Yankee Air Museum located in Ypsilanti, Michigan. With a B-17 bomber as the backdrop, World War II veterans will gather for one more mission, one more campaign. But first, in order to participate, World War II veterans must mail in an RSVP form. For all the info, go to DetroitGreatestGeneration.com. Click on the special link calling all World War II military personnel, sailors, soldiers, airmen. Do this now. That's an order.
This message brought to you by Veterans Radio. Heard every Saturday morning at 10 right here on Ave Maria Radio.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, and I want to show you this is a very beautiful book, part of a great series called The Christians, The First 2,000 Years. Seventh volume is out. These are good size, well-bound, very colorful. These are coffee table books, aren't they? I mean, they're of that high quality.
They're certainly of a very high quality, and each volume has something in the order of 200 to 300 photographs and pictures, and we've got a lot of commissioned art in it, which we had done ourselves, and mostly American illustrating artists. Some Canadians have done that, and the painting on the cover of the young soldier is a very, very moving kind of thing. It's done by an artist in Pennsylvania by the name of Harrington, and he had to make that soldier, you know, resolved, frightened, everything that soldiers are when they're in those circumstances, and a lot of the artwork had to have that thought behind it, and we've done that right through the series. It's principally really it's mostly biography. That is, the stories are connected into one great pattern called Christianity. But the way we've told the story is by mostly individual people. You mentioned earlier, Al. For instance, Frederick Barbarossa, he's a guy that followed a fierce ambition. He was a very tough guy, and he had a belief, but he never really allowed it to interfere with what he was doing until he'd won. And then within 2 days, everything falls apart, and he realizes that he hasn't been fighting for God, he's been fighting against God. And he goes through a conversion process, and eventually reconciles himself to the church and the Pope and that kind of thing. It goes down as one of the great figures of German history and of European history. Well, that's a good story, you know, and that's how we've tried to tell the whole thing.
And you've also got the story of the Crusades in here, you've got Catholic, Protestant, and Orthodox writers. So you're going to get a pretty balanced view of the Crusades.
We're trying to really make it so that a Protestant reading the thing would say, well, you know, I don't agree with the Catholics, but at least now I can see where they were coming from.
Right.
And the Catholic says the same things. Well, I don't agree with the Protestants. If I did, I'd be one. But I can now see why they did what they did.
Sure.
And if we can get that, the thing that comes through in it is people begin to respect the other side. They love them sometimes, which is, of course, exactly what our Lord told us to do.
Now, this is volume number 7. Can people still purchase the volumes 1 through 6?
Oh, yeah. They have. We sell sets. If you buy volumes 1 through 6, the price is quite a bit lower because we only make one shipment, and they sell each volume for quite a bit less. They sell a whole 6 volumes as a package for $199 U.S. with a shipping fee that's not all that high.
No, that's good.
And, that's a good deal. And we've still got all those for sale. And then the volumes coming out after that, we sell one at a time until we get the whole 6 of them done, and then we'll be able to sell them as part 2 of the series.
Have you, the previous volumes cover, I've got here volume 1, The Veil is Torn, so this deals with...
Yeah, volume 1 covers the New Testament period and just after it.
Right.
One of the things that happened in 70 A.D., and that is... roughly 40 years after the crucifixion and resurrection, is that the city of Jerusalem was absolutely obliterated by the Roman army. And this forced the church, of course, which was centered in Jerusalem, this Jewish church, it forced it out into the world.
Right.
Not very many people realize that when Jesus predicted, you know, that the city was going to be destroyed,
mm-hmm.
It was. And not very long afterwards, he saw that coming. And so on, the volume 2 covers the great martyrs. There were two. The church was under terrible persecution for 200, nearly 300 years. And that's one of the great differences between Christianity and Islam. Islam was spread mostly by military conquest, and Christianity was spread by the example of its suffering. And I think those two things remain a difference between the two religions.
I think it makes a huge difference for people to realize, just as you pointed out, that Christianity is birthed as a minority religion, which is persecuted, whose founder had laid down his life and refused to take up the instruments of violence. In the initial experience of his followers was that of persecution. In the case of Islam, its founder does take up the tools of warfare, and spreads the new revelation. His followers are not reluctant to use force. And
Muhammad was a soldier.
And that's right. He functions kind of like a Pope Generalissimo.
Yep.
And the difference between the birth of Islam and the birth of Christianity is profound and tells us a lot about the subsequent history, leading up to the Crusades, in fact.
Exactly. Well, the Crusades, you've got to remember, they were a counterattack.
Yeah.
People, they're sometimes portrayed as, you know, Christians picking a fight with the peace-loving peoples of the Middle East. Well, all those peoples in the Middle East were conquered by Islam.
Right.
And the Crusades were an attempt to recover what had been taken. But the other thing that I didn't know until I did the history, that after the original Islamic attack, which goes on till the 700s, in the next 300 years, they kept the pressure on Europe.
Right.
You know, Rome itself, the city was attacked 3 times. Southern France was taken over for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Spain, of course, remained Muslim for about 800 years. And this pressure kept going. So the Christians said, look, if we don't go and take the war to them, they eventually are going to get us. And that was the reason for the Crusades. They didn't work. They failed.
Right.
In the end, they were the effort to establish Christian kingdoms there by military force just didn't work. Actually, I think there's more conversion going on now quietly, both Catholic and Protestant and Orthodox, in the Middle East than anybody knows about.
Mm.
You hear all sorts of strange stories of Muslims coming into the faith, and if a Muslim converts, that's a capital offense. They can be put to death. So can any missionary attempting to convert them in the Islamic code. So that a lot of things, there's another crusade going on now, I guess, but nobody wants to make too much fuss about it, call attention to it, because the more we do, the more likely those little missions will come under attack in the Middle East from Islamic traditionalists. The war is still going on,
mm-hmm.
and it hasn't stopped since the Muslims came into the picture in the 7th century.
Well, you are up in the series through Volume 7, which takes us through the Crusades. Volume 8 will be what?
Volume 8 will cover the Renaissance,
okay.
of course, and the beginning of the Protestant movement. One of the things that people should also realize is that the Protestant movement is a Catholic movement in the sense that almost everybody in it was a Catholic when they started out.
That's right.
And the other thing that surprised me was the demand for reform of the church was way back into the Catholic era.
Right.
And Francis and so many of these people were insistent that the church change. And Francis himself had a lot to do with changing it just by his own example.
Yeah, no, very true.
It's not as though suddenly a whole lot of foreigners came in. The Protestant movement came out of the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very true. And then, so you're going to be dealing with the Renaissance in Volume 8, and then in the Reformation
is in Volume 9.
And then you get to the Protestant Reformations in Volume 9.
Yeah, that's right. We've given it the title of the Century of Giants. There are three great figures: Luther, Calvin, and of course Loyola. And I didn't know this either. Loyola and Calvin were at the University of Paris at the same time. But whether it should have happened or it shouldn't have happened. And what did happen, the only thing, as I said earlier, we got to do is say, here is what the Protestants, here's what they did, and here's why they did it.
Yeah.
Here's what the Catholics did, and here's why they did it. And let the reader figure it out.
Sure. And then we get to the period of the Enlightenment. Is that how you're dealing with it?
I guess the next volume 10, goes into the discovery of the Americas, of course.
Oh, okay. Okay.
There is a tremendous Catholic movement of Catholic missionary work in that volume.
That's
which
yeah.
runs from the year 1600 up to 1789, the French Revolution. But the whole of South America, much of Asia, and Central America and North America had pretty wonderful Catholic missions in them,
mm-hmm.
and the biggest adversary the missionaries faced was the secular movements from their own countries.
That's right.
The great movie, The Mission, brings that out very well, and it was absolutely accurate.
Yeah. It's true. The great resistance was from secular rulers who believed that Christian missionaries would somehow, by converting native populations, would make native populations more independent and less malleable to the commercial interests of
that
the
secular
states.
That is exactly right. That also happened in North America.
Yeah.
I don't know American history that well. I know in Canada, the fur trade created Canada, and the fur trade also corrupted the Indians. And the biggest champion of the Indians all through that period were the Catholic missionaries.
Yeah.
They tried to prevent it from happening, and of course it was when the almighty buck,
Volume 11 looks like it runs from the French Revolution to the end of World War One.
That's right. The friend of mine lives in Washington. He says, "Well, you had the two good revolutions and then the two bad revolutions. The good revolutions were the one in England and the one in America." The bad revolutions were the French Revolution and the Soviet, rather, the Communist Revolution in Russia.
Yes.
So the second one covers that volume 11 runs through the French Revolution and up to the and ends with the Second World War, which was the fall of the national monarchies. They are created way back in the volumes that we're now doing. And they continue to run things pretty well their own way until the end of the First World War, and then that collapses. And of course, Volume 12 is the 20th century.
Hmm. Well, that's exciting. It's exciting. And now, do you have a foundation supporting you, or are you utterly dependent upon subscriptions or enrollments?
We find that we're not quite sure of this yet because we don't know how many people will buy Volume 7. From what we can see, about half the cost of the volume will be borne by the people subscribing to it, and we'll still have to get donations for the other half.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But which comes down to about $220,000 per volume that would have to be donated. Now, as that happens, more and more people subscribe, so the proportion that has to be donated diminishes in the portion that the thing becomes closer to self-sufficient. But we're dependent upon donations to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how can people stay abreast of the development of the project? How can people donate and participate with you? How can they get materials to tell others?
Well, we have a website, which is www.christianhistoryproject.com. It's one word, christianhistoryproject.com. And we have a toll-free line you can call 1-888-234-4478.
Give me that again, would you please?
Yeah, it's 1-888-234-4478.
Okay. And we'll have that information listed at AveMariaRadio.net in the Crested Guest Archives.
Yeah, it's there, and you can the website shows the first six volumes. They're just putting the volume 7 on it now.
So it's ChristianHistoryProject.com.
That's right.
Okay. Well, Ted, once again, thanks for all that you do. I've always been enthusiastic about this project, and I look forward to its ongoing work. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Al.
Ted Byfield is general editor of the Christian History Project, The Christians, the First 2,000 Years. We'll have links at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. I'm Al Cresta.
Love is in the air, and that's why the Ave Maria online store has plenty to offer about existing relationships and blossoming ones.
The ABCs to Finding a Good Husband and a Good Wife are a pair of unique books to help find a lifelong partner in this divorce-crazed society.
The book Holy Sex tries to explain why Catholics are satisfied with their sex life more than others.
And the DVD Fireproof is an inspirational film about love, sacrifice, and heroism.
To learn more, go to the online store at AveMariaRadio.net. That's A-V-E Maria Radio. Love is in the air, and that's why the Ave Maria online store has plenty to offer about existing relationships and blossoming ones.
The ABCs to Finding a Good Husband and a Good Wife are a pair of unique books to help find a lifelong partner in this divorce-crazed society.
The book Holy Sex tries to explain why Catholics are satisfied with their sex life more than others.
And the DVD Fireproof is an inspirational film about love, sacrifice, and heroism.
To learn more, go to the online store at AveMariaRadio.net. That's A-V-E MariaRadio.net.
Good day, I'm Al Cresta. Come help build Catholic radio in Northwest Ohio by attending the Annunciation Radio Fundraising Dinner at Central Park West in Toledo. I'll be speaking on the importance of Catholic radio just before an address from Bishop Leonard Blair. And an exciting special announcement. To join us, call Deacon Michael Learned at annunciationradio.sbcglobal.net or at 419-754-1009.
Do you have someone special making his or her first communion this year? Whether the person is a child or an adult, Easter is the most holy time of the year. G.A. Fuchs and Matea Church Supply have a tremendous supply of communion, RCIA, and Easter gifts. Whether it's a beautiful rosary or a complete communion set, we have it all. G.A. Fuchs and Matea Church Supply can provide you with veils, gloves, ties, or a beautiful communion dress. We have a huge selection of books, devotionals, and your favorite patron saint statues. G.A. Fuchs at 32525 Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights, or Matea Church Supply at 3762 Ford Road in Garden City. That's where you'll find all your Easter needs. Remember, that's G.A. Fuchs on Stevenson Highway in Madison Heights and Matea Church Supply on Ford Road in Garden City. You can speak to one of our professional salespeople by calling toll-free at 1-800-345-4694. And we look forward to seeing you during this wonderful Easter season.
Moves closer to choosing a nominee to replace Justice David Souter on the Supreme Court. And the White House has confirmed the meeting, said it did not indicate a finalization of the president's review process. But what this means is that this conversation is going to start becoming front page again. President is to talk at the White House with Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid, Judiciary Committee Chairman Pat Leahy, Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell, and Senator Jeff Sessions, the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee. Don Stewart, who's spokesman for Mitch McConnell, said the Republican leader hopes this is the start of the consultation process and that Obama, quote, follows the lead of previous presidents and has many such meetings over the coming weeks before a nomination is announced, end quote. Well, joining me right now to discuss this debate, the options, the what one ought to expect, is Gary Bauer, 2000 Republican presidential contender, former domestic policy advisor to President Reagan, and currently president of Our American Values. And Gary, once again, great to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be with you as always.
Well, what do you know? I remember the Souter nomination. I remember being told that he was kind of a safe guy, kept to himself, that John Sununu had vouched for him. And then, of course, the nomination started, and we learned that David Souter, in college, had, as I remember it correctly, had driven a pregnant female acquaintance to an abortion clinic. And Souter went on to be solidly pro-abortion.
Yes, indeed. Much to the chagrin of John Sununu and many other people here in Washington. You know, you'll remember the reason that somebody like Souter was nominated was the ascendancy of what was called the stealth strategy.
Right.
That is that, you know, liberals in Congress would go ballistic if somebody was nominated that was clearly pro-life and clearly conservative on social issues. And so a number of Republican presidents on occasion have looked for nominees that didn't have much of a record. Of course, my argument about that has always been that if you're pro-life but you have no record of ever doing, saying, or being anywhere that's pro-life, how reliably are you pro-life? Our stealth nominees have been so stealth that even they didn't realize they were pro-life, and Souter was one of them.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Well, where do you think the president? What do we know about the president's own judicial philosophy? I mean, he knows the law. Does he want? Does he think he needs a constitutional expert, or is he looking for somebody to meet certain diversity quotas? You know, woman, Hispanic, homosexual. What do we know?
I think you hit on two areas that are pretty predictable here. One, that the administration will attempt to fill some sort of identity quota, whatever that might be. It could be nominating the first Hispanic Supreme Court justice, putting another woman on the court, perhaps another African American. There is talk about a possible gay or lesbian appointee. That's one. I think the possibility of a white male, white heterosexual male, is probably not good. But more importantly,
people are taking odds that it's going to be a gay Hispanic female from Harvard.
Right, a threefer or a fourfer or whatever
right.
That would be. I think more disturbing, though, is the judicial philosophy. And here the president
sure.
has said a great deal, including this constant refrain that he wants Supreme Court justices who have empathy, who will understand what the impact of their rulings are and so forth. Well, I would argue that it would have been great to have a Supreme Court justice who would have weighed what the impact would have been on unborn children
right.
of a ruling that abortion on demand is a constitutional right. But I don't think that's the kind of empathy the president's looking for. And when he talks about empathy and the way that he does, it disturbs me a great deal, because as good as that might sound to the untrained ear, that is the last thing in a country whose system is built on the rule of law that ought to decide court decisions.
Right.
There's a reason that Lady Liberty or the statue that represents justice is always pictured as being blindfolded, because things like empathy are supposed to be put aside. The salary of the individual, whether they're poor or rich, that those things do not go to the constitutional questions that are before the court. And if the law requires a decision that may seem unfair, then under our system of government, the legislature deals with the unfairness by changing the law. But the last thing we want is judges thinking that their job is to deal with unfairness and ignore the Constitution.
Right. Right. I would be suspicious, too, that he would be interested in Supreme Court justices who have exaggerated respect for international tribunals and the Supreme Courts or Supreme Judiciaries of other lands.
You know, bingo. Not a legal word, but you just hit the nail on the head. I don't think people are very focused on this, unfortunately. But already, some key appointments in the Justice Department have been lawyers and some scholars that have, unfortunately, already written that the United States needs to start following international law. And, of course, as we've seen in Europe and elsewhere, some of the worst trends that we're fighting in jurisprudence now is much more well advanced in other places around the world.
Right.
So, and of course, international law has nothing to do with the requirements of our Constitution. So all these things are troubling, and I guess the final troubling thing is that he probably has enough votes in the United States Senate to nominate and get confirmed almost anybody he wants.
Yeah.
So I hope that conservatives in the Senate, in view of that, will nonetheless be willing to thoroughly vet and expose the judicial philosophy of whoever he sends up so that the American people know what kind of people are being put on our courts.
Well, let me say, I'm all for that, getting all the information we need, profiling this person, understanding as much as we can from the written record and also from their personal acquaintances. But having said that, mm-hmm. how much time want one to spend on trying to get the president to move from one candidate to another? And, I mean, I guess you could argue some candidates would be worse than others, but are we going to be able to have any influence on that?
You mean before he nominates somebody or
no,
after he nominates?
After nomination.
I'm assuming that even if we expose the nominee's record, that nominee will still be confirmed. So I don't think we're going to have much success in getting him to change his mind. I think he feels like he's in the driver's seat. He's got the votes, and I think he'll be tempted to go pretty far because of that in a left-wing direction in who he picks. But I think the confirmation process can be an educational process for the American people that will help them make decisions later, political decisions later, about who they want to be their senator, who they want to be their president, and so forth. And so for me, you know, I think the nominee ought to be asked, do you see anything in the Constitution that requires states to allow men to marry men? Do
right.
you see anything in the Constitution that, in your view, gives any protection, even an iota of protection, to unborn children? Go through those things so that the average American sitting there in their living room can say, wow, this guy is really radical. Mm-hmm. Why did the president put him on the court, rather than it being a surprise later.
Okay. So this is something. So this kind of thing should be done at the front end and try to get it all out at the very beginning, even if we cannot stop the nomination.
I think so. I still remember the horrible things that were done to people like Clarence Thomas that didn't have anything to do with their philosophy, an effort to smear. And you'll recall Justice Alito, who is a wonderful man. You don't have to agree with him on everything, But nobody that knows him believes that he has a bigoted bone in his body. But that became the line of attack. He made it on the court, but not before he was smeared. And in his judicial hearing, one senator said, Judge Alito, let's just get something on the record right now. Are you a bigot? And Judge Alito's wife was sitting in the front row weeping that she and her husband were even having to deal with this issue. So I would never recommend my side do anything like that. I think all that is illegitimate, but I do think it's legitimate to question the judicial philosophy of somebody.
Mm-hmm. Let me kick it back to the Clarence Thomas nominations now that so much time has passed, and it's even hard to go back and remember a lot of it. But how did, as you look back, how did that happen where this woman, Anita Hill, came out of the woodwork and almost derailed the nomination? The groups like the Alliance for Justice got behind her. Had they been sitting on this? Was this something they had planned?
You know, I don't think we have an accurate history, even now, of all that happened. And I was chairman at that time of the Citizens Committee to confirm Clarence Thomas.
Oh.
And I was in the hearing room the first day when that testimony was offered, and I have to admit my knees buckled.
Yeah.
And I, of course, as you can imagine, one of the first things I did during a recess was to meet with Clarence Thomas and ask him face to face, is there any truth in these charges?
So you were reassured by Clarence Thomas immediately.
Yes. Absolutely.
See, I didn't realize that you were that close to it at that time, Gary. That's interesting.
Yeah, and let me share one more interesting moment.
Yeah.
You know, those were some very bad days, obviously. But on one of the days before another round of hearings, I walked out of a room where some of us were meeting with Clarence Thomas, and we walked down the hallway to go back into the hearing room. And there were a group of tourists standing there. They saw all the cameras. They knew something must be happening. And so they waited to see what all the rigmarole was about. And Clarence Thomas and a group of us rounded the corner. And these tourists, just a group of average people, recognizing who he was, started shouting out their support for him and applauding. And I thought it was one of the turning points psychologically for him.
Oh.
And that later that day was when he took the senators on directly and said that what they were trying to do to him was a high-tech lynching.
Yeah, yeah, boy. Boy, those were intense days.
They really were.
Oh. Are the days of that kind of gotcha Supreme Court nomination over? Do you think everybody knows how to play it a lot more safely?
No, I think so much is at stake that the left would still engage in those tactics if they had to.
Gary, thank you so much. How do people stay in touch with your work? Where do they go?
Go to our website, ouramericanvalues.org.
Okay. Gary Bauer, president of Our American Values. We, of course, have it linked at AveMariaRadio.net.
Investing can be stressful, especially during tough economic periods. Ave Maria Mutual Funds offers you the peace of mind associated with professional investment management. Experienced portfolio managers make investment decisions based on sound investment fundamentals and pro-life values. If you're a serious long-term investor, now may be a great time to examine your portfolio and see if the Ave Maria Mutual Funds could help you achieve your goals. To learn more, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA for a free investor kit or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
People are coming from all over to see and hear Father John Carapi live at the 19,000-seat HSBC Arena in Buffalo, New York. Saturday, August 15th, Father Carapi will make his only scheduled public speaking appearance of the year and his first since 2007, and will ignite your faith with four power-packed talks on the Holy Spirit. Tickets have been purchased by people from 45 states, as well as Australia, the Philippines, and throughout Canada. Appearing with Father John Carapi will be EWTN's Raymond Arroyo and me, Jerry Usher, your Master of Ceremonies.
Join Ave Maria Radio on this three-day pilgrimage that also includes a visit to the Royal Ontario Museum in Toronto to see the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit. For complete information, call Corporate Travel at 313-565-8888. That's 313-565-8888. Or on the web at ctscentral.net.
You need the prophetic message and inspiration of Father John Carapi.
You're listening to the best of Cresta in the Afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. We've got two more hours coming up. Number is 1-877-573-7825. That's 1-877-573-7825. Be taking your calls. Let me tell you where we're heading. We want to take a look at Pope Benedict XVI's visit to Yad Vashem and to other sites in Israel. Ron Rishlak will be joining us. There is, mounting criticism of the Pope's Holy Land visit. And why? That's what we want. You know, it's got to be turned. This is primarily a pilgrimage for the man. And, Tom, we're going to talk it over with Ron. Afterwards, Brad Miner will be joining us. He's a man who's given a lot of thought to what it means to be a man. And he understands chivalry and gallantry and honor and maturity and courage and the virtues, right? So he joins us. Will this year's graduates find a model of manhood? And then direct to my desk, I have more on angels and demons. You won't become either, but you will learn a lot. See you then.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you missed a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
For 800 years, the Alexian brothers have served the sick, not as priests, but as Catholic brothers.
We're brothers because this is the life that God called us to.
In the struggle with alcohol or drugs or AIDS, the Alexian brothers are there.
We're looking for men who have the courage to live in vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. If a man is convinced that God has called him, then we have a spot for him.
If you feel a call to brother the world with the Alexians, call toll-free 1-800-556-0332.
The results are in, and your budding Shakespeare could use a little help with addition and subtraction. Math professor Fred Wirth shares tips with HSLDA President Mike Smith on today's Homeschool Heartbeat.
Fred, we've been talking this week about why kids might struggle in math. Tell the parents listening what they can do to bring up their students' math performance.
Well, the ability to problem solve is vital to success in mathematics, whether we're talking about taking standardized tests or just learning mathematics in homeschool. Not all problems on tests are word problems, but they are very important. The first word problems come up in first grade, where Mary has some apples and Johnny gives her some more. Nobody has any trouble with those, but each year the word problems get tougher until you have one train leaving Boston at 10 a.m. and another train leaving Cleveland at 11 a.m. Most people have a difficult time solving the more complicated problems because they've never really been instructed in problem-solving techniques. There's a method that I teach that can really help in learning how to do word problems. And, Mike, I believe you'll be telling people how to contact you in order to get a copy of this. The first step is just read the problem.